Smoking bans reduce EMS calls. The challenge of increasing EMS standards. Another positive look at rural EMS. And we're going to take a look at CPAP in our tip segment this week. If that's what you're looking for, you found it right here on this week's episode of The MedicCast.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters.
This is The MedicCast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up. Here's today's show with the PodMedic, Jamie Davis.
Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The MedicCast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the PodMedic, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's show. We've got a great show coming up for you this week. I've got some news items coming up, including one inspired by listener Matt and his email on changing EMT standards in the state of Pennsylvania. Then, after the news, I'll bring you a tip segment on continuous positive airway pressure, or CPAP, in this week's Tip of the Week segment. All of that will be coming up for you soon here on The MedicCast. Before we get to that, though, I do want to make sure that you are checking in on the links and additional information that you can find over at The MedicCast blog. You'll find that over at medicast.com/blog. There's a show notes link at the top of the page. Go ahead and click that link, and that'll take you right over to the most recent episode. And of course, you can scroll down there and find previous episodes that you're looking for. Don't forget, there's also a search box on the site. So if you're looking for something in particular from a previous episode or a topic that I might have covered in the past, you can use the search box to look for something in particular. Also, take some time and make sure you follow up on that information, though. It's important because you need to understand how it applies to your EMS practice and protocols. And as always, remember to follow your own protocols. If you want to get back in touch with me, make sure you do so. You can email me here directly at podmedic@mac.com. Shoot me an email with your comments. If you have a question about the show or you have a suggestion or an idea for a future episode, all of that is important and makes you a valuable part of the MedicCast community. Either way, I work hard to respond back to every single email that comes in, and I will get back to you, so keep them coming. Also, don't forget, if you're an iPhone, Android, Windows Phone, or Windows 8 user, check out the brand new free MedicCast app, and you can find that in the store for your device online. Just search for MedicCast EMS app. And if you already have it, well, I'd like you to go back and rate the app. Leave a comment and leave a rating. That was a great way to be an active supporter of the community and tell others what you like about the MedicCast app. That's enough contact information. Don't forget, the ProMed Network podcast studio will be recording live at EMS World Expo in Las Vegas coming up in September. If you're going to be there, I want to see you at the booth. So come by, make sure you come up and say hi to me and the other podcasters you see there. I really look forward to the opportunity to meet some of you, the awesome MedicCast audience. I'll get into this week's news, but remember to support our sponsors. Remember to let them know you heard about them here on the MedicCast. That's how you help keep this show coming out each week and keeps the lights on here at MedicCast Studios. Take a look and support them and check out what they're talking about on the show. Starting off this week's news, we're going to take a look at a study on smoking bans in casinos. Now, this was put together recently by the University of California, San Francisco, and researchers there found that when Colorado recently extended their smoking ban in the state to include bars and casinos, ambulance calls to the casinos dropped by 20%. Now, the article compared ambulance calls to the casino before and after the smoking ban went into effect, along with calls to this casino's restaurants, which already had a smoking ban, and they found that they dropped by 20% when compared. The restaurant had already been under the smoking ban, and they had the same number of calls, so there wasn't any change there. I thought this article was really appropriate. We've been looking at COPD and respiratory problems in recent weeks and really looking at the long-term health effects of smoking. And this article goes a long way to pointing out how public health efforts positively affect how EMS programs operate in their communities. We have less calls. This could also include prevention programs like teen drug and alcohol abuse, biking and motorcycling safety programs. The fact of the matter is, EMS needs to partner more closely with public health in our communities, and we can't wait for them to reach out to us. We have to reach out to them and find out how we can help promote their activities and support their efforts. So I want you to go out there and talk to your training officer and talk to your medical director and find out what you can do to be more proactive in coordinating with your local public health department. And what are they doing and what are their programs and outreach right now? You can be an active part of partnering with them and being a dual prevention effort in your community. An article I found recently from Central Texas College on them releasing EMT night class information reminded me of an email I got from audience member Matt recently. The article was an announcement from the college that EMT night classes will be offered that prepare students to pass the NREMT exam for EMT Basic. I guess that's just EMT now. I wonder what the effect the new updated educational guidelines might be having on the students in this program. The reason I ask is because Matt raised the question about new guidelines increasing the cost of EMT training at schools in Pennsylvania. He said that as of 2013, EMT classes in Pennsylvania have increased from 140 hours of time to 220 hours of time, and because of this, the price has gone up from $450 to over $1,000. This has had many effects on future volunteerism in EMTs in the state. Volunteer fire departments are discontinuing paying for EMT classes because it's just too much expense even for their members. Now this goes having a long-term effect, according to Matt, having less EMTs in the area. He says that because Pennsylvania has a lot of country roads, rural areas, snow, mountains, everything else, we need emergency health care, and in most cases, that's going to be, first off, volunteer EMTs responding to the scene. The new costs and guidelines will likely, according to him, decrease the number of EMTs in volunteer ranks, and this could have the worst effect in the poorest, most rural areas commonly served by them. Now, Matt contends that increasing the standards to 220 hours for EMT students is just too much. Now, unfortunately, while I appreciate all his comments and the proposed effects, and I agree that this is going to have somewhat of a dampening effect, I don't agree with his continuing to hold on to the old educational standards. You know, honestly, if we want to advance the profession of EMS to the next level, then we need to continue to increase educational standards and increase our professional levels of advancement. This includes EMT Basic. We have to keep moving forward despite roadblocks and hurdles that come along. Now, unfortunately, fewer but better trained EMTs will be out there, but I think that actually is going to be an improvement. At least I hope so. What do you think? I'd love to hear from you. Shoot me an email. Share your opinion with me and the rest of the MedicCast community by sending that email into podmedic@mac.com and let me know what you think about new educational standards and increased hours for training. Let's go ahead and wrap up the news this week with a related article on how some rural EMS agencies are making do with less and doing so successfully. Jackson County, Illinois is meeting and exceeding national standards for response times, despite cutbacks and reduced funding. This is what Dottie Miles says. She's sitting on the board of directors for the Illinois State Ambulance Association. She says that many rural parts of the state of Illinois are making do with less and are still adequately serving their communities despite the shortfalls. Now, this is another of those great public outreach articles that I love to talk about because it is one of those things that teaches our communities how medical systems and emergency medicine works in their area. As you know, I like to point out these types of posts and news releases since they show you opportunities to educate the public about what we do and how we can take that article and make it something positive. Even bad news, like reduced funding and shortfalls, can be turned around into an education about EMS. A few weeks ago, I pointed out how West Texas ambulance services were being cut back because of rural funding cuts. I'm sure Illinois is facing similar problems in their rural parts of the state, but this article is largely positive and educational in nature. Now keep in mind that when any EMS news item features pop up or ideas pop up for news in your area, you can turn it around. Figure out how to do it. Make it a positive look at EMS in your community. Then make sure you get back to me and share the link so I can put it up here on the Medicast. Maybe talk about it in a future episode. I'll post any press releases you send me over here on the Medicast site, so send them in. Either way, I look forward to hearing from you and what you're doing to educate your communities about what you do in EMS. Last week for our tip of the week, we took a look at COPD patients and how we manage them. So this week, we're going to look at one of the tools we use for treating those patients, continuous positive airway pressure devices, or CPAP. I'll be using the Maryland medical protocols for what we do to administer CPAP in this tip segment. As always, there's a link to the show notes to those protocols, as well as some additional resources on this treatment. But I want you to get some understanding of what CPAP can do and how amazing this tool is for management of some of our respiratory patients. Take a look. So we're going to go ahead and jump in and take a look at CPAP here, and I want to just first talk off about a little bit about what our objectives are going to be. We're going to make sure we understand CPAP. You may have heard of BiPAP and PEEP as well, so we'll just talk a little bit about those. We'll also do another review of anatomy and physiology to make sure you understand what's going on with patients that may need CPAP, or and you know you would be applying it to these patients in your units. We'll then look at some of the basic physiological effects that CPAP has, including what we can expect to see and some of the challenges that patients might experience. It has some side effects, primarily discomfort for the patient, and they may feel claustrophobic, but we'll talk about that. We'll go over indications and contraindications, and then I'm going to just kind of go down the list of some things to keep in mind as you administer the device following manufacturer's guidelines. But some general things we can go over, talk about what we do and how we manage patients while preparing and getting this device put on. So we're going to go ahead and look at CPAP, which if you look it up in a medical dictionary, is, quote, a method of ventilatory support whereby the patient breathes without mechanical assistance against a threshold resistance with pressure above atmospheric maintained at the airway throughout breathing. So what does this mean? Well, you know, it's a lot of big words there, but basically we're going to create an increased positive pressure environment inside the patient's airway system, their ventilatory system, and they're going to go ahead and breathe without any kind of ventilation assistance. We're not bagging the patient with this. They have to be breathing on their own, maintaining their own respirations in order for CPAP to work, but the patient breathes against that threshold of resistance, that positive airway pressure. It increases the force with which air enters their lungs, and then they have to push back against it. And all of this pressure increase will expand the lungs. We'll show that a little bit more here as we talk about anatomy and physiology in a few minutes. Now, what do we talk about when we look at BiPAP? You may have heard of BiPAP. BiPAP is something we usually see in the hospital setting, and it's because it's just a little more complex machine, and it requires some tweaking of settings and a little bit more fussing with it than we probably need to worry about in an ambulance. It's bi-level positive airway pressure, and it's a mode of ventilatory support which basically has differing positive pressures for inspiration and exhalation. So it might be a greater pressure on inhalation and then a lesser pressure when the patient exhales out. And this can help the patient in several ways, but again, it's usually seen in the hospital setting and not something we usually deal with in the EMS setting. But you may have heard of BiPAP. You may even have BiPAP in your protocols. It's basically a more sophisticated version of CPAP, and it just has two different levels of pressure settings that happen in the course of the ventilatory cycle. PEEP. What's PEEP? Well, PEEP is positive end expiratory pressure. If you increase the PEEP, you're increasing the amount of pressure in the airway system during the cycle of respiration. And it's important to understand that. Positive end expiratory pressure, we hear about PEEP all the time. You can increase PEEP using a bag valve mask. I don't know if you were aware that you could do that, but you can actually increase the pressure in the system using a bag mask. It's just labor intensive. You can't do anything else if you're bagging the patient. So CPAP takes the place of that, providing that continuous airway pressure. So you need to understand this. PEEP is something you may be setting or adjusting throughout the course of using a CPAP device. And as always, you're going to follow your protocols and your manufacturer's recommendations for the device you're using. Some people have a recommended initial setting, and then they adjust it to titrate it to patient comfort. But that's something that you will have to do based upon your individual device's recommendations. So what does CPAP do? Well, it increases the residual capacity that the patient has in their lungs. If you have a patient who has congestive heart failure, for instance, and their lungs are filling up with fluid because of we have heart failure going on, it's backing pressure up into the lungs, the blood's not able to circulate effectively, so it pushes plasma and fluid into the lung, into the alveoli, and fills them up with fluid. Well, if they're full of fluid, they can't exchange gas, so the patient has respiratory distress because of it. If you increase the positive pressure and increase the residual capacity because you're expanding more air spaces by having more pressure in there and pushing that fluid back into the vascular space, you're increasing that residual capacity, that amount of lung space, surface area that is available for gas exchange. It reduces the work the patient has to expend breathing. You know, if they're using all of their accessory muscles to breathe, this will help out with that because it's going to have some positive pressure going in. When they go ahead to take a breath, the pressure of the air itself in the system is going to help force, help push air down. They're not going to have to work as hard to take a breath. It's going to increase gas exchange because of the increased residual capacity, and it also increases surfactant levels because, again, that surfactant is what keeps the alveoli from collapsing and helps to keep them from sticking together. And that surfactant, this allows it to spread more evenly and coat the alveoli that previously were collapsed. So we want to make sure that we're aware of that. And these are the things that CPAP does. And it's a really a miraculous device. For those of you that have never used it, it really changes the way we manage these types of patients. Let's look at the respiratory system again. We just talked about it a little bit, but you know, you have the large airways that branch out into the smaller airways, all the way down into the bronchioles. And you get to the terminal end of a bronchiole, a respiratory bronchiole, and you get into the alveoli, the alveolar sac and the individual alveoli. And this is where gas exchange happens. If you're watching the video version of this, or you have the app and you can watch the video of the tip segment there, there's a great picture of the end of a bronchiole where it terminates into the alveolar sac. And you can see the capillary networks surrounding them. This is what is going on with a normal patient. If we even zoom in farther, we can see an individual alveoli, and we see the individual sac there surrounded by capillaries, and we can see blood cells. The capillaries are one blood cell wide, and they pass the blood cells through, and carbon dioxide diffuses out, and oxygen diffuses back in. Imagine what would happen if that bubble was filled with fluid. well, then we couldn't have gas exchange efficiently, or maybe only half of the area is available for gas exchange. Positive pressure opens this up to its fullest extent, and will be pushing that positive pressure will push the fluid back into the vascular system and can help a patient who's experiencing congestion, pulmonary edema, to have a much more rapidly become clear in lung sounds, or more clear in lung sounds. And that's important to keep in mind. So what do we do? What do we use CPAP for? What are the indications for CPAP? I'm going to use the Maryland medical protocols. Yours may be different. Always follow your protocols. But these are the reasons and the ways I can use CPAP in the state of Maryland. You use CPAP for respiratory distress or failure, usually due to cardiogenic pulmonary edema or COPD or asthma. And the patient has to have spontaneous respirations. The patient has to have their own open patent airway, okay? We have to have a system that works for CPAP to be effective. It has to be an adult patient. In my case, it's patients who are 15 years of age or older. You might be able to use it in your system for pediatric patients. However, we have to be very careful. Pediatric respiratory systems are a little more fragile, especially the younger they are. And we want to make sure that we're using appropriate equipment to ventilate or to use for CPAP. We don't want to be blowing out their systems with too much pressure. You might also, and I said usually use for patients that have cardiogenic pulmonary edema or COPD or asthma, but you might use it for a non-cardiogenic pulmonary edema. What would that be? Well, a near drowning. You got that patient who's got fluid in their lungs, or they've got congestion for another reason, maybe some kind of a chemical exposure. We might be able to use CPAP to maintain open air passages and gas exchange while we get them to the hospital. Usually you have to consult for this, but if you've got CPAP available and you've got pulmonary edema and you think it'll work, you probably won't have too much trouble getting a physician to agree on the Medline. So don't be afraid to consult and share some thoughts and see what they think. And this is always a good topic for discussion for training on alternative uses for some of our equipment. Contraindications? Well, this would be places and situations where we need to intubate the patient. They can't maintain their own patent open airway, and so we need to use a surgical airway, or we need to use an endotracheal tube to go ahead and intubate these patients to maintain that airway. That would be a situation we don't want to use CPAP. We also want to use it when the patient just doesn't tolerate the CPAP. Maybe we've put the CPAP on them, we've tried to adjust it, they're getting too claustrophobic, they're becoming anxious, and their anxiety level is actually inhibiting the positive effects. In that case, we're not doing them any good, and we should discontinue the CPAP. It's contraindicated for those types of patients. And patients with no spontaneous respirations can't use CPAP. They need a ventilator, which is a whole different animal, okay? Or a bag valve mask. We need to ventilate these patients. CPAP does not act as a ventilator. It's just a continuous positive pressure in the system. You still have to be able to initiate taking a breath and exhale on your own. So if that isn't the case, that patient is not a candidate for CPAP. Some of the things I keep in mind, and you might do something differently, but administration and use of the CPAP, we want to always monitor and maintain a patent airway. Start off while you're getting the device assembled, because it usually takes a few minutes to get all the hoses and things put together and the masks set up for the patient. Always, put them on 100% O2. They're probably a candidate for that. If you're considering CPAP, they should be on a non-rebreather mask at 15 liters. So go ahead and get them on 100% O2 while you get the device set up. Have a pulse ox on that patient while you're setting it up. Let's get a pulse ox reading and make sure we know what it is. Why? Well, we can trend how well this patient's doing. If we have got them on a pulse ox on room air and we see that it's 85 and we put them on 100% oxygen and it comes up to only 87 or 88 and they're still having distress and their lungs are full of fluid, and we put the CPAP on them and they come up to 92 or 93, well, guess what, folks? We've just had a positive effect, and we have the numbers to prove it, right? We can trend these patients effectively. If you have them available, you should be prepared to use an N-Tidal CO2 device that has nasal prongs that can be worn under the mask. So the mask will fit around the tubing of the nasal prongs. It won't inhibit the flow. It should seal around it. But this will give you a way to read N-Tidal CO2 readings and see if the patient's blowing off some acidosis in that method. We want to apply the CPAP using the manufacturer's directions. So you need to go to training. If you have new CPAP devices, you need to go to the training and make sure you know how it works. One CPAP device is very similar in some ways to other CPAP devices, but just in the same way that heart monitors are different, CPAP devices have different ways that they're controlled. And some of them have a replaceable valve that changes PEEP, for instance, whereas others might have a dial that adjusts the PEEP setting. So you need to understand how that works for your device, and that's why you need to follow manufacturer instructions for setup and application. And then prep the hospital. This is one of the most important parts of this. If you've got a patient on CPAP and they're successfully managing the CPAP and you've got them managed and they're doing better, you need to let the hospital know that you've got CPAP on this patient, because they've got to have respiratory come down, get a CPAP machine or a BiPAP machine set up and ready to go in the ER so that you can transition this patient from your CPAP device to theirs. Now, in some settings, this might be very easy to do. In other words, you might use similar manufacturers, same manufacturers, and the tubing just connects over to the new device and makes it very simple. In other situations, there might be a situation where they have to apply a whole new and fit a whole new mask setup to the patient. But whatever the case may be, letting the hospital know you're coming as soon as possible and that you have CPAP engaged gives them the opportunity to make sure respiratory therapy is there and ready to take care of this patient so that you don't have to stay there with your CPAP device and wait while they bring theirs down. So it's just it's good courtesy. It is better patient care, and it'll end up saving you some time on the back end of the call. So as we wrap up this segment on CPAP, just remember that CPAP is a fundamental change in the way we manage cardiac heart failure patients, asthma and COPD patients, near drowning patients, because it just fundamentally changes the way we manage patients' airway and ventilatory work of effort. You need to make sure you're familiar with what you're using, with both your protocols and with your individual specific equipment, so that you know how to use it appropriately and you can assemble it efficiently and quickly so that it can be applied to the patient in a timely fashion. Review your protocols as always. And finally, there's some great resources out there. The National Heart, Lung, Blood Institute is a great resource for anything respiratory. You can find that at nhlbi.nih.gov. I'll have a link in the show notes to it. They have a great section on CPAP that describes it. Theirs is focused a little bit more on CPAP for use in patients with sleep apnea, but it's still a great description of the tool, and there's some resources there for healthcare professionals as well. And then there's a great CPAP supplement that came out recently from GEMS in their magazine, and it's also available online at GEMS.com, so I would check that out. And of course, there is a link in the show notes for that, as well as my Maryland Medical Protocols link. All of that's available for you there. So that's it. That's our look at CPAP for emergency medical services. I hope you've enjoyed this, and I look forward to hearing back from you. If you have a comment, maybe you'd like to ask about something I said, or have a suggestion or a comment about something I said, please let me know. I look forward to hearing from you. That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. I want to thank all of you for checking out the show this week and remind you to follow up on all of the information from this week's show over at MedicCast.com/blog. When you get there, you'll find the show notes link right there at the top of the page, and you can take a moment and check out and follow up on all of that information, the links to the news items you find there, also all of the tips and additional resource links I put there. All of that's there for you as well. You can also sign up for the email newsletter while you're there. There's a little form right there on the right-hand side of the page. Just fill that out, and you can actually get all those links and things sent directly to your email inbox every week. I also welcome your comments and suggestions directly by email. So if you want to, shoot me an email to podmedic@mac.com. You can send in your news links, ideas for future show topics or interviews, whatever comments you might have. I look forward to hearing from you. And let me know, because I will make sure I get back in touch with you. I work hard to respond to every email that comes in, so please, please keep those emails coming. If you want to catch up with me on social media sites and pages, well, you can do that. You can find me most places under the handle PodMedic. So catch me over at Twitter or Facebook, twitter.com/PodMedic or facebook.com/PodMedic, and friend or follow me on those sites. You can also check out the MedicCast on our very own Facebook page. We have over 4,000 followers there. It's growing all the time. Head over and join this growing community at facebook.com/MedicCast. Click the like button at the top of the page and join the MedicCast community over there. That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. Please make sure you spread the word and share the MedicCast with your colleagues and students in the EMS world. I'll be back here each week with new episodes, new interviews, tips, and more every Monday morning so you can kick off your EMS week. Tell somebody else about the MedicCast today and share the show with somebody you know. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. It's time to close out the show. Don't forget to thank our sponsors, and remember, folks, scene safety. BSI.